welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick.
Yeah.
Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHA studio with the wide awake number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like the Dairy Free Goddess of our grassroots radio operation, the Belle of our moral inner city news managing editor and host of WNHH's Love Babs.
Yes.
Babs Rolls Ivy.
Good morning.
Like the queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, La Voz Hispana, publisher Norma Rodriguez Reyes.
Hola.
Not to mention the flyest news hunter gatherer this side of Fleet Street, the straight shooter of substance, the swami of style, New Haven Independent reporter.
Ooh, I got a new one. That's new.
Markeisha Rich.
Happy Friday.
WNHA station manager and heavy D Donald Trump devotee Harry Dros is here. He's the bravest man in New Haven.
Yeah.
Even when his beloved president becomes a Democrat for a week. And we have somebody else in the studio.
Yes.
We have the prince of pleasantries and punctuality, the blessed beatboxer of banksters and bacchanalians, the just-in-time judge of jackals and japery, the sentinel of serenity, sincerity, and salvation, the griot of the grassy knoll, the conquistador of cussing criminals, keeper of the cure, weaver of wellness and wisdom, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance, the erudite earl of ergonomics, the liberated lion of lucidity, our executioner of existential enemies, alchemist of acidness and alliteration, zealous zapper of xenophobia, quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, the grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, the first name in flame, the daring don of dope deliberation, the daptone deliverer of decency, maximal media maestro, bodacious bold-faced barista of bad pop, chess master of chill, the just somewhat honorable high priest of hip-hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning racketeer, riffitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted,
yeah,
maximum mixologist Joe Ugly.
Yes, sir.
Of the Joe Ugly Show.
Now, you know,
morning.
You still have the music up.
I do. I thought it needs some music when you hear
what
about
Joe
Ugly.
What about number two? The two percenter.
And oh, the two percenter.
Norma's like, I'll be listening.
Welcome,
and
everybody.
Something's missing.
So it's it was a big news week. We didn't come crashing down. A lot of the news was the front end of the week. Big news about an employer leaving town. And we had the buildup to a big primary for mayor, Democratic primary for mayor, that everyone said was going to be close. The pundit says it would be close. And then in the end, it was a wipeout. 30 wards in New Haven.
Wipeout!
Tony Harp easily won all 30 wards in New Haven.
All
she won
them.
75% of the vote against her challenger, Marcus Packer. Were you surprised, and what do you think happened?
No, I was not surprised.
Really? No, no. Actually, no.
You sounded
actually,
pretty worried the week before.
I wasn't worried. Not me. I was never worried.
You guys were on Harp's side, and you were worried she was going to lose.
Oh, no, not me. I never was worried.
Let me be very clear whose side I was on. And still,
the people.
I'm on the side of Mayor Harp.
Okay.
I have no problem saying that.
Me either.
However, I was worried. I was concerned. I think what happened in the 2016 national election can happen anywhere as long as people are complacent. And I think when you look at the return numbers, people were complacent.
Meaning that we had a very low turnout. 20% turnout citywide, 7,700 votes out of over 35,000 around Democrats who are registered. I would argue that was not surprising. I'll tell you why.
Well, I wasn't surprised about that because primaries, when there's no aldermanic races connected to it.
It's not
that's
a matter
the huge
of
reason. There were aldermanic races in only 3 of 30 wards. And in those two of those wards, turnout was much higher. Bella Vista and Celentano School, wards 11 and 19, had 45% turnout.
Yeah.
Whereas wards that usually have even that or higher, like Ward 25 and 26 did not. They were in the 20s. Yeah. So I think Babs has a point there. But also, I'm not sure that outside of a base, the candidates excited anybody. Marcus Pack ended up having under 2,000 votes, and there was all this noise, and people were angry about getting fired, and their friends showed up. But really, nobody else did. Any thoughts on that, Norma?
When we mentioned the different wards, it would really be a good idea if we mentioned the areas because a lot of the listeners don't know the ward by their
that's
numbers.
That's why I said Celentano School 19 and Bella Vista 11.
No.
But then you mentioned 24 and 25.
Oh, I'm sorry. 25 and 26 is Westville. Right. Which is
the Westville area.
Westville, East Rock, and the East Shore have the biggest turnouts usually, and they did not this week because they did not have all their races.
Now, you know, I'm just wondering how will this turnout, percentage of turnout, affect how many delegates we get to the state convention.
Right.
Is that based on voter registration?
I think it's votes.
I thought it was registration.
It's registration?
I could be wrong. I thought it was registration. And our registration has gone way down because they pruned the rolls from people who shouldn't have been on it. We went from over 50,000 Democrats to 35,000 this year.
Now, in terms of the primaries, I strongly believe in primaries. I think they're very good.
They're very important.
And very important. But it brings in new blood. Mm-hmm. It brings in new people mm-hmm. into the world of politics. Mm-hmm. And PACA is a young African-American man. Mm-hmm. So although he may not be mayor, but I do believe that he's got a future ahead of him if he doesn't become a bitter person and take it personally.
In addition to new blood, people, primaries bring ideas. I would argue, now you guys are hard on Marcus Packer.
I concur with you on that one. Primaries do bring ideas.
I mean, John DeStefano used to say, he'd grumble all during the campaign season, that guy's a jerk for running against me. But afterwards he said, that person had a pretty good idea I'm going to use.
Right.
And I would argue that Marcus Packer did public service. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think of his motives, whatever you think of why he ran or how he ran.
And I'm with you on that.
I think that there are people in the city whose voices were heard who otherwise wouldn't have been heard. In those debates, he gave strong performances on issues, and he spoke about mm-hmm. affordable housing crisis. I don't believe he presented an alternative for what he would do on specifics. He didn't name a single project he would have handled differently from Mayor Harp. But he did bring to the fore that a number of people in New Haven feel like not only can they not afford the rent, they do not believe enough attention is being paid.
I don't know if a number of people didn't vote. So if they felt that way, they would have voted that way.
But maybe they felt that way but did not believe Marcus Packer offered enough of an alternative or a different idea. Didn't believe he would change that, which is a legitimate idea.
Okay.
But still, there was a debate. Tony Harp had to listen mm-hmm. to a point of view she didn't agree with that was critical of her, and she had to step up her game mm-hmm. and refine her thoughts and her policies and think where to go next.
I mean, I will say that is part of the primary process. That if you don't learn anything through the primary process, then you shouldn't be in politics.
And for instance, commercial development in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
That has not happened. She brought in these consultants at the beginning of her administration to do these I felt they were kind of out of town people didn't really know the streets, who had all these ideas about Kimberly Square, Grand Avenue, Westville. I don't think that ended up amounting to anything. I still think they're doing some good decisions in some of these neighborhoods. I'm not critical or not critical on this, but I thought that was a very legitimate point Marcus Packer brought up. She talked out of this campaign about having a more focused neighborhood-by-neighborhood strategy on code enforcement. You know, LCI is overwhelmed and keeping track of every landlord in town. She said we're going first into New Hallville,
But that's not new. I mean,
every single administration talks about neighborhoods. The lack of paying attention to the different neighborhoods mm-hmm. versus taking care of downtown and other areas that minorities are not involved.
I'm just saying that her record is not perfect on some of the stuff. She got a little push to do better on it.
I just think we set the bar so low. It's not enough to raise an issue. You've got to be able to raise the issue and then execute whatever you're raising.
Or at least give me a plan or something.
Like say, I feel this way about this and this is what I think we should do to move it forward. Not just throw it out there.
Well, he said he would form some task forces.
But, Paul, I have to ask you Paul, was the mayor incorrect when she said that people were not being priced out because the developers are not taking properties away from individuals? They're actually using new development or something?
And she also argued that by building...
I think
she's right about that. And I also think she might be right that the new buildings will get tenants from some of the other buildings and rents will go down in those other buildings. Mm-hmm. I think that's very possible. So it's not that I'm arguing she's wrong in her approach. I'm saying there's a point of view in the city that's critical that wants her to deliver and articulate.
But isn't
and she articulated what you just said in a way she didn't used to.
But here's the question I have to ask. Good point. But here's what I have to ask, though. People might see things growing up around them and start thinking they're being priced out of the city. But is it true? Is it accurate?
I agree, and I think it's up to the mayor to explain that. And when a mayor has no competition, mm-hmm. there is not the pressure to really
have a conversation.
I agree with you there.
I totally agree with you.
She does a good job of explaining what she does right.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Except on Mayor Monday, and I do think she does a good job on Mayor Monday. In general, I do not think she does a good job of telling the city what she does right.
But
or
I think,
I think that
yeah. Well, she needs some PR people.
I think a PR
they,
person's fine. I think she is not. She's a doer.
Yeah.
She's not a promoter.
But there's a lot of people like
that
because look, we've got a president who always talking about what he does, but he doesn't really do anything. So, you know,
I'm not criticizing Tony Harp at all. I'm saying why I think primaries are a good thing. Sanctuary cities. Now, I happen to personally agree with her on sanctuary city policy. A lot of New Haven does. It's a winning issue politically, her position in favor of sanctuary cities. But there are some people who question it. Mm-hmm. And Marcus Packer started to question it in a way that some people found interesting until he backtracked because he didn't want to get the heat. And he kind of withdrew from that. He started articulating a position that was not going to win him an election, but was going to give voice to people who thought maybe we should think twice about saying no to potentially some of this federal money. She gave a ringing position. She came out. She always has been strong in this. She came out stronger than ever. And I felt that was another way that a primary clarifies issues and gives voice.
There it is. If he's going to give an issue, he's going to raise an issue, it's just going to give her ammunition to sound even more informed. That's not a good issue to put on the table as a politician.
I think we need sanctuary to talk about
city, sanctuary city, she's good at. If I knew that I didn't have the background or anything else to put forward, I won't put it there so she can come out now and give a clear
Well, he was running for the people who are disgruntled. There aren't enough disgruntled to win an election. Small group.
This well, 2,000, because that's the votes he got,
almost
right?
2,000. Okay.
All right.
Okay, so if there's
but those
over 2,000,
it's good to hear from those 2,000 every couple of years.
Why? All right.
No, I'm sorry, Joe. I cut you off. You don't think so?
No,
I think you guys are saying that if you're going to be a challenger, you got to do more than give the voice to it. You got to show that you could do better. That's why Marcus Packer didn't win.
Right.
But I still think it was a public service when nobody else was running, even if his motives might have been complicated.
See,
it was a public service to have those debates.
This is my thing. See, like if a Henry Fernandez was running, he could stand on a body of work that says, you know what? I tackled this, that, and the other thing. And let me show you. Look. Marcus doesn't have any of that.
That's why he was a stronger candidate.
You know.
That's why Henry Fernandez was a stronger candidate.
That's what I mean.
So I'm not saying Marcus Packer was the strongest candidate. I'm saying there was nobody else doing it.
I know, but that says the bar is so... bar is so low if we just thank you, Marcus Packer, for whatever.
Does that mean you want him to run? Now, his name is on the ballot for the general election as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's leaning very strongly to continuing to run. Do you think he did what he needed to do, or do you think he should be running in the general?
I think that's a question he's got to get with his camp and sort of decide.
Right.
But,
at the end of the day, you said he raised a point. How much more are you going to raise the same points? I don't know.
Do you think he benefits more long term if he doesn't run in
the
general? And why does he benefit? Do you think you've made his point that I can run, I can articulate the points, I'll be back? Or do you think running in the general gets him to appeal to some of these 14,000 independents and 2,000 Republicans to try to build a base? Because one thing he didn't do is he didn't field the team. In the old days when people ran for mayor and challenged, they would put a slate of alders with them to have a set of ideas and to build a team for the future. Nobody does that anymore. Justin Elliker didn't do that. Jeffrey Creese didn't do that. Partly because Unite Here, which is back in Tony Harp, if you run someone against their candidates, then they're going to bring 10,000 people to vote against you too.
Right.
But I'm wondering, how does a Marcus Packer, anybody, start to build for the future? Does he do it by running this general election, or do you declare victory and move on?
He just needs to go. He needs to get a body of work behind him that supports his interest in this political field, because he doesn't have anything to stand. Like, where are the successes that he could show that, you know what, when I was this, I tackled this?
He answered that question in debate. At 13 years old, he handed out palm cards for John Daniels, and he sat on a youth commission.
Well, that's pretty powerful.
And you know what, Paul? Yep, I'm ready to run a city. Those palm cards really thought me something well. Something real. Look, here's what I'm saying about this.
Yeah, what are you saying about this?
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Packer, he came out, he did what he has to do. I think if he aligned himself now, opposed to trying to go against the tide, if you go with the tide now, if you want to have a future in politics, because politics is about building a coalition. And if you don't build that coalition within ranks as well, it just can't be the outsiders. You know, you have to build that inside, because
Well, it was more like the revenge. People felt there was even the
right.
New Haven residents said,
I just need more than young, black, male, articulate. I have to have more than that.
And good looking.
No,
well, that's
no, this is dangerous.
All right.
You know, you know,
objective, but.
You know, Babs, you listen, you are so right. You know what it almost reminds me of? You know, when I hear this, oh, you know, it's a black male running. It almost seems, it always reminds me of the false affirmative action, the false one I'm talking about. Affirmative actions, people like to say now, it don't work. That's because there was a group of people who literally were hiring people because they're black opposed to
being
qualified.
Yeah, they sold it short instead of doing the hard work of finding the people outside your network who are good at the job. You just put a face up there and everybody lost.
And that's why I don't just want it to be, a black person is running.
Because there's a lot of young black talented brothers out there who could run this city.
Us white people, we white people do the hiring. We know a lot more people just like us, and we have to look beyond our... People, you got to do the hard work to find the people who are qualified or outside the people.
And they're out there.
Circle.
I mean, they're out there.
You gotta
go beyond your whatever your fear is and step
but
into.
I thought there was a visceral moment about black male when Tony Harp at the last debate finally called him out and said, "What have you ever accomplished?"
Mm-hmm.
He got off script.
Yeah,
right. And he said, "I'm proud of what I've done as a black man surviving in America." So that was a visceral
moment. What
does
that mean?
Which I don't think is
and
a
it's kind of hard to say that to the woman who gave you a job.
What I'm saying is I think there was an undertone of black men.
I felt like I wanted to
some
sing
black
a spiritual.
Men being resentful of black women who have prominence and feel they're not getting the due. And then black women who might be resentful of black men who are saying, I don't have to accomplish anything. I'm male, so I should have it. I think
absolutely. Would you sit at my table at my house and have these conversations?
I know that's not my job, though, but my job is to.
No, that was a great analysis. I have no beef with that.
I thought there was something I couldn't comment on as a white person in this race.
Oh, you could comment on anything.
But there was something going on with black men and black women, and then
I think you read it right.
That came out of that last debate.
You read it right.
That moment.
Look, if we're not ready to talk about stuff openly, then what are we? You know, it just goes back again. Another one of the false truth. I'm going to emphasize on that. The false truth is we got to have We got to have this conversation. And then as soon as the conversation starts, people start cringing and falling back and don't want to talk about it. I don't have a problem with what you said.
I mean, I think Joe Ugly was a much better candidate.
That would never happen.
I mean, I know you wouldn't, but...
Yeah. We need two percenters.
But he would be really good.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows politics. He knows this town. You know, he's got successes under his belt. He comes to politics, honestly, because his mother was... Right. Well respected. So, I mean, why not him? Why not
because
him?
The African Americans would say he doesn't count. He's Jamaican.
He's Trinidad.
I mean, Trinidad.
Trinidad. If he were busy being
get
the mayor,
your island right.
Would he be able to be here on Pundit Friday, which is exactly on WNHH Radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org.
But you know,
down the week's headline, and I do have a theory about Marcus Packer.
Can I just follow up real quick on what Norma said? No, Norma, no joke. That is true.
Yeah.
That is absolutely true. I mean, I was just came back from the military, serving 4 years of my life, give to this country. I go up to Bishop Brewer's church. This is back in the 80s. I came home and I went to church there, and the visiting minister stood up and said, "Black people, wake up. You know, it's not the white man taking your jobs. It's the West Indian."
Oh
wow!
So you know this is killer ranks.
Wow.
You know, at the end of
what
the day,
do?
I'm a black man. What do I do? I want my $5 back.
but that's exactly what is happening with the Puerto Rican community. The Puerto Ricans, the same way the African Americans, also believe that it's not the whites or the blacks that are taking your job. It's all the new immigrant wave that are coming in from Central South America.
Right. And we have to stop.
It's the same thing.
We have
that's
to
what
stop
divides
this
us.
Stuff. Exactly. And that is that's systematically put in place. Like I correct people consistently when I hear them say, "You're not black, you're West Indian." What am I, honorary white over here? No, I'm black. Don't call me. Don't just say I'm West Indian. You're really trying to tell me that if I'm standing in the corner with two African Americans, Joe Redneck is going to say,
"Hey, West Indian man, get out of the way while I smack these other two guys around."
Hey, Joe, you said I'm allowed to wade into this, even though I'm a white guy. Isn't it also true there's a lot of prejudice among West Indians looking down on other African Americans as being...
Oh, now you're trying to start a fight.
No. You know what?
Because I heard it firsthand.
Listen, I have no problem with saying it. Look,
but it's true.
It happens, and I want to always correct it because, look, let me help people understand this stuff. And I'm talking mainly to my West Indian brothers and sisters right now.
I hear about work ethic and lazy when I hear West Indians talking about other African Americans.
Let me clearly speak to my West Indian brothers and sisters right now who are listening. Where we came from, we're used to seeing ourselves in power. My doctor was black. My family lawyer was black. My governor was black, as such. When we come to this country, we don't feel as if we're second class. We don't come with that. So that we project that forward. White America tend to see that and then give that a closer embrace, whereas the blacks... Black Americans have a different struggle altogether.
Or descendants of slaves.
Exactly, as a descendants of slaves. So white America has often, whether it's conscious or subconscious, separate us in that. And a lot of, yes, West Indians, some of us buy into that nonsense as if black Americans are lazy or black Americans are this. No, it's not in the slightest. I was once asked, Why do blacks stay out, hang out on the porch and the kids play on the streets? And the only answer I can have to that is that goes back to slavery. They say, look at you, Joe. What is that? I came from the islands. Could it be that the elders had to stay out on the porch for accountability in front of the tents?
Isn't it great to stay on the porch and play on the street? That's neighborhood.
I don't have a problem with that.
Why would someone be critical?
But a lot of whites then tend to think that that's just porch monkeys. That's where that comes from. Come on.
Really?
That dirty, dirty
thing. I always jealous that I don't have enough time to sit on my porch and enjoy life rather than scurry
around. But the issue...
First class privilege over here
that,
to my left.
That, no, but Joe, the issue that you're bringing is the same thing with the Puerto Ricans. Exactly the same thing. That the African Americans have issues with all the blacks that come from other islands and stuff like that. Well, the Puerto Ricans have the same issues. But you see, what happens is it all depends from Latin America if you come here educated. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Right.
Then they start talking about us Puerto Ricans, that we're citizens, we're lazy, we live on welfare.
Right.
And yet they're utilizing us to get their citizenship.
And you're right.
So, and I know Paul sometimes, it's like he says, the Puerto Ricans always see, they could see a whole bunch of white people, a whole bunch of Hispanics. They see two blacks, the blacks get everything. And then the blacks say the same thing. They see, all blacks, a few Puerto Ricans, and the Puerto Ricans get everything.
And that is strongly pushed by some white Americans. It's a strongly pushed.
Divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer.
And for the Jews,
consciously or subconsciously, it is. And it's even worse if it's subconscious. That means you've seen your parents or neighbors or somebody else doing it and just think this is the norm. Divide and conquer. So when that's why you see me. I don't care who you are, or where you're from. You're my people. But if you show me wrong, you're gonna get this work.
And for the Jews, including in New Haven, we had the same.
I got used to that.
We had Eastern European Jews versus German Jews, and people like my family came with nothing, feeding pogroms. We were looked down upon as the scruffy Jews with the proper trying to assimilate German successful Jews here. But we have the reverse snobbies. I feel like they're just pretending there's something there aren't, and we got the medal.
So,
but I have a Marcus Pack theory I want to give.
Okay. But this is the question is, will we ever, and I always say, if racism goes away tomorrow, classism will be the next
human
thing because we have a need
to feel
that. Human
ways to put someone else down to feel
what
better
are
about
doing
themselves.
Here?
So, hey, Sam's here, the intern. So here's my theory about Marcus Packer. I think he does have a job.
What'd you say?
I think Marcus Packer does have a job.
What?
That nobody knew about in this election.
What?
Okay. I think he is secretly the CEO of Alexion Pharmaceuticals. Here you have this
I got to go talk about my housing.
Global company builds a $14 million headquarters, a glass headquarters on 100 College Street with $26 million of state help. Promises to do all this stuff. And then they decide they're going to move their 18 months later, move their headquarters to Boston. The morning, the hours when this was announced was the hours that the polls opened in the primary where Marcus Pack was saying that Tony Harp isn't doing everything great she said she is. When Tony Harp spent months saying, look at Alexion Pharmaceuticals. We have this great bioscience sector. The news came out so close to the polls opening that there really was no chance for the Harp administration to spin it or give it context, which they've now since done. And there is an interesting spin on it. But there was no better gift you can give a candidate. Mm-hmm. And this global company obviously has more things on its mind.
And yet, it didn't help. So it's not a gift.
Oh, no, it was a gift. It just wasn't well received.
Should have been done a few days before.
No, but here's the deal. As far as it goes for Alexion Pharmaceuticals, devil's advocate over here. Didn't they deliver on what they promised?
They promised jobs.
They didn't say how long. They didn't say how long, and they didn't make the deadline. Just because they move out a week after the deadline.
No, they actually have a clawback provision. They actually have to give the money back with interest, and they are going
to
be giving it back.
Way
because
to go.
They have to. But they made so much money based on how they were operating, including according to Brazilian and American government authorities, by cheating and lying on testing and marketing.
Right.
But in any case, they have enough profits that they can say, okay, we'll give you $26 million back after we did this whole thing, and you gave us all the state money through this program called First Five to come downtown. Now, the Harp administration's spin is, when we first made the deal, they promised a certain number of jobs, and then they brought a lot more jobs. Mm-hmm. And when we built the 14 stories, they were only going to take part of the building, but in the end, they took the whole building. So now it's going to go back to the original idea with part of the building. But moving your headquarters, they just closed the factory in Rhode Island. They clearly
am I going to get housing over there? That's really
I asked about the housing because I was thinking about Babs, because we all want Babs to get the 14-story penthouse apartment there.
Yes. Is there one already there?
I don't know. But they you can build anything.
The city told me that there was such a specialized state-of-the-art lab facility there that you don't really build those as apartments. That it's very valuable commercial real estate, that they think that even though they're moving the headquarters, Lexion, they're not building it because of the weakness of our tech sector.
They're not just going to 10th floor.
They have a new CEO who wants to be
picky.
In Boston because he lives in Boston.
Why don't you just move in my building? There. We have room.
They're keeping a research division here, and they're saying
we can lure
other tech businesses and lab businesses to that space. And that it's hard to compete with Boston, New York for two reasons. Because they're bigger cities with more investment in their tech sector, there's a lot more people around. That companies like GE, when they wanted to become more of a tech company, went to Boston because they were around a cluster of more people like them doing that creative cutting edge work. The CEO of Aetna wanted to go to New York because it was a more fun place to live. And Alexion, even though they said they want to be a tech sector, they're actually leaving their researchers here, but they have a new CEO who lives in Boston, so maybe he wants to live there. So the city's take now is, we still have a booming bioscience sector. We're still going to get the taxes from that place. We're going to have the number of jobs, at least for now, which I don't trust are going to stay, that they originally claimed they were going to create, not the more that came later. And now we have a challenge. We've got to continue competing with Boston and New York to build our tech sector, our bioscience sector, and that we have better lab facilities to do it with. My question is in fact, whether the lesson of Alexion is that you can't invest in companies. Companies are global. They move really quick. Industries change fast. They're fickle. That what you need to build in is an infrastructure, the good schools, the roads, to be a place you want to live, which New Haven kind of is, I think, for young people, creative people. And then the companies will come and go, but people will want to locate here. And that's how you get that you don't waste the money on giving tens of millions of dollars to tech companies who are then going to turn your back on you and move their headquarters 18 months later, that you invest in job development. That's actually Marcus Packard talked a lot about this, about how you got to get the workforce, because our workforce is not competitive with other places, and make the schools better, make the roads better, and then it'll be a place that people want to locate.
You know, we have to get away from this big bulk employer, because at the end of the day, small to mid-sized businesses is who carries the tax base in this country. If the cities start focusing on those and start supporting those businesses strongly with as much vigor as they put behind these big businesses.
How do we support them? Like, I would still support them through a better infrastructure they'd want to be, rather than direct financial help, because when they get big, they leave. Alexion started in New Haven,
left for
Cheshire, came back, and then left for Boston.
But by that, right, you see, what you're thinking is just working with a business, just one business through. No, it should be like the school system. You get new businesses. I mean, you encourage new businesses to start.
But Connecticut is not a business-friendly state based on the taxes.
Taxes, right.
You see, I don't buy that because they're paying higher taxes.
Yeah,
in
the places that they're going.
I think that's Republican.
Massachusetts is called Taxachusetts for a reason.
No, Massachusetts and New York, then in Connecticut, and that's where the company.
But I get what Paul's saying. Think about how, why, like, so these companies are just picking up and moving to Boston, to New York. Clearly, those places have the kind of infrastructure and things that those businesses want. And they don't have to give them any money to come do it.
It's not necessarily
the infrastructure. They just move.
No, it's not necessarily the infrastructure why people go. They go there because they have the students, the employment force.
That's part of the infrastructure, though.
Okay, all right. Let's look at that.
We're talking human resources as well as physical resources.
We don't have that level of the likes of an MIT, which would put out those techs individual in Boston. But what do we have? We don't have a tech school to send. There's a whole, from MIT to Benjamin Franklin to all of those tech schools that are in the Boston area that can supply these companies. However, if we're only thinking of just building out these infrastructures as such and not thinking of smaller businesses, small to mid-sized businesses, and keep helping them grow.
But I'm not arguing against what you're saying, Joe, but I still think like those small companies would benefit from something that overall provides an infrastructure. It provides more employees because they're better educated. So getting our school system right is a thing that should happen. And having all of these schools that we do have here working in tandem as part of whatever industry we're trying to cultivate here. If it's going to be biosciences, how do we get everybody connected to that?
But
how do we get Albertus Magnus connected?
Right.
Who's having these conversations? Who's in the room? Like, Yale shouldn't just be having that conversation.
Need to accept the
how do
fact
we get all of them in
that we cannot compete.
UConn too.
With Boston and New York. But what we can do is what the Schubert Theater used to do. All of the shows would start here first. If they made it here, then they would go to Broadway.
That's what Alexion did.
So that's what we're doing here.
And that's what
there's
we should
nothing
do with
wrong
our businesses.
With us accepting the fact that we're good incubators
right.
to
and
start all these businesses.
Do. Thank you.
And knowing and that they're going to leave anyway, but that we have other businesses
yes.
to backfill.
Thank
I'm
you.
Not mad at that idea.
Thank you. That's yeah. exactly right.
That's a really.
I'm not
exactly
mad at that idea, Norma.
Thank you.
Norma, they should call you.
So we're the
Norma Reyes.
Hold on. Norma?
This woman has a business plan.
No,
there we go.
Norma, I'm going to give you props, but that's my idea well explained.
Okay. Oh, fooey.
I like that.
That's my idea well okay, explained. Look, Joe Ugly and Norma Reyes for governor,
and
lieutenant governor.
Development.
No, that's a really good idea.
It's a really good idea.
New Haven, the birthplace of the nation's bioscience hits.
Yeah. There you go. Why can't we have that?
Because we can't afford to keep building $100 million buildings.
We can't.
We can't.
And they're not having the state throw money at them.
We're getting a lot of tax money from that. Well, that's actually a home run. That's part of the city's argument. We got that building built. It didn't cost us. And the state got paid back. And it's actually adding millions of dollars to our tax rolls.
We better not give it to Yale.
So that's
okay? We better not give it to Yale.
Oh, somebody build a little apartment on top of Alexion for Bath.
For Bath.
It has to be 3,000
on the tax rolls.
Higher floor than Joe Ugly at 360 State.
Yeah. You can wave from...
I'll give you a ladder.
And we'll give you a reminder that you're listening to Punch
Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair.
Live Steve New Haven. Hey, guys, you guys can rest easy. I got really good news for you.
What?
Uh-oh. I want you to feel really good and safe.
Okay.
If the next time there's a political protest in town, they're going to be 100 cops ready with batons that are a lot bigger than they used to be and with pepper spray that can go 26 times in a shot and go farther than the pepper spray they have now. This week, the police commission approved new general orders that allows them to use bigger batons, stronger, more powerful pepper spray as the city trains 100-member riot squad. Because their argument is that if we get what Charlottesville got, what Berkeley got, we're not ready to handle it. And even we got little tastes of it with the February and August demonstrations that went awry. That we're not
so
ready
we're gonna
to
become
so are you guys feeling? I'm not noticing this piece. You're not feeling comfortable about this riot squad.
When it's I saw the
now
picture,
all of a sudden we're gonna be a military state. What's going on?
Of the pepper spray. At first, I thought it was
fire extinguisher.
A fire extinguisher.
Are you serious?
That's
it's
how
huge.
Big.
It's big.
That pepper spray.
It's really big.
How much does it weigh?
Oh, that's like the one that that cop was just walking around at Berkeley, just spraying those people in their faces with. Is this what we're coming to?
It's a 12-ounce battle.
I think. Listen,
it is the even though this one isn't a fogger, like it doesn't fog the whole. Like it's direct, right? But it is huge.
It's a problem. You know, I have a problem. First of all, you know, the military, we keep building all these machinery, and then after a while, they sit in these armories, and they just have to now turn them over to the police departments, and that's how they ended up with these military-style vehicles all over our cities. It creates its own us, them mentality. And it creates separation within, because people already see, if people perceive police as the aggressors from the jump, showing up with a fire extinguisher size pepper spray is going to do nothing more than escalate the
problem.
So
here's what you think: the police are wrong, that the police and the citizens are safer if they're able to more effectively control a crowd that's got out of control and
totally
danger.
Wrong. That's taking a deep chance. Once again, you're actually
supposed to be a visual deterrent, Joe.
It's a visual add-on.
Does it work? Is it a working? Is it a working pepper spray device? Is it a working pepper?
You know that,
because that's not a visual.
Had to spend $600,000 just to protect Ben Shapiro. He was speaking yesterday at Berkeley. No, and they haven't spent that much because people are acting the fool these days.
No, yeah, but this is where we go. Okay, so every time we turn around, this is why we have nuclear weapons now. We can't destroy them because someone can't say, okay, we got enough. Things work. Somebody got a one-up
view between Joe and Harry. I'm going to offer a different opinion that's in between the two of you. I would argue that in theory, they're right that police need to be trained and have the tools to control a crowd. But I feel like in practice, if the police department cannot control its own rogue officers, if the police department could not show the rest of its department that it will discipline people who break their rules for how to deal with citizens, then that's more dangerous to fully arm them. And that the first order of business is that they have to finally have the top cops hold accountable the cops who abuse citizens. Now, we have just had a run for a few years. Mm-hmm. Where cops have been abusing citizens, violating their rights. Mm-hmm. And at these demonstrations, there was that case with Nate Blair.
Right.
This, dreadlocked
right.
Buddhist guy in a crowd just walking through a street. Mm-hmm. The cops were so enraged at the protest, told him to move over. And these cops come out of nowhere and they just slam him to the ground, give him a concussion. He's not resisting. And they've never said that was wrong. They, as you know, they detained and arrested and stole the camera from our reporter when they felt threatened. No, and it was even discovered they broke their own rules, and they've never apologized or given discipline. They had the Proud Boys come. They ended up arresting Barbara Fair with no evidence that she did anything that would come close to requiring an arrest. They never explained it, never said, they never even say, they have not once in years, like nobody's perfect. Most right. cops are good cops. Everyone right. makes mistakes. They have never once for years said, we might have made a mistake. And they've given carte blanche. The person who's recommended will be helping lead the force for this new riot squad was the one who approved the arrest of our reporter. And then this week we had a trial of a New Haven cop named Daniel Conklin. He, IA, Internal Affairs, has found that he lied to them, destroyed evidence, and abused citizens several times. He got promoted. Now they had a trial this week at a case where he stole the cell phone from a guy who was video recording him after the cop freaked out about who was controlling the scene when this guy's mother was trying to get out of a construction scene. He goes on trial for civil trial for mischievous unlawful arrest, right, and abusing this guy's rights. And at this trial, it emerges that every piece of evidence he said for this arrest has disappeared. We think the dog ate it. He claimed that someone had complained to him and written a report that this was making the construction scene dangerous. That disappeared.
And
he changed his story when a second video emerged about what he'd actually said at the scene. All this happened on the stand. The New Haven lawyer even tried to get the judge to throw out the case because there was a reporter writing about what happened in open court. Despite all that, the police won. And the police department maintains they have not said a single thing to their rank and file that anything this cop has ever done is wrong. So do we trust our police department to have riot squad and these tools that they might need in theory if the cops who abuse us will be promoted and never once second-guessed and the rank and file will be told these are the cops who are good cops?
You know, this is where state and federal investigation comes in.
You know,
but they're worse. The state investigated that what they did with the police dogs and the cop who went wild on our own.
But did this all happen prior to Campbell becoming the chief?
Jeff Sessions runs this federal.
Did all this happen prior to?
It all happened since he was the chief.
While he was interim.
Yeah,
because it's.
Yeah, Chief Campbell has not taken a single. He's not said a single word. Chief Campbell is a great guy who's scared of upsetting the white thug element in that department, which is not a big element. It's not all white cops or anything, but he has catered to them since he's been in there, and he's not said boo about a thing they've done wrong.
And, you know, I once heard a cop said something that literally made me like, are you kidding me? Where one cop said, you know, you don't say something, you know, because we were talking about the stop snitching thing, and I'm like, listen, man, I support you guys on the stop snitching, but you guys got to do with this. Put it on yourselves as well. You have a responsibility to turn in other cops. And I said the difference between that and, you know, them and us is because if you snitch on a cop, next thing you're on a call and you're going in into a situation by yourself, and that made me cringe. And I'm like, oh no, get the feds on the phone. you know, when you think like that, just think of that. Someone has to worry about their life. It's going to be in danger.
If they snitch, that alone.
I mean, any cop that turn around, any officer that gets, which I personally think of, any officer gets wounded or anything, he's put into an ambush immediately. The feds should just swoop down and arrest his partner or whoever was on the side.
Joe's talking, sir.
I honestly believe
that. But no, law enforcement and the citizens need to get their act together. I mean, law enforcement.
Come on, Trump with both sides.
Stop. Campbell is afraid of anything. That's reading into a situation, and Paul is still upset about his reporter getting caught up in that.
It matters.
You know,
whether the government arrests reporters.
I agree it matters. But I'm saying we're judging, you know, Chief Campbell by a lot of things that we're just reading into. We don't know the backstory. So
no one judged him. Did anybody in this room judge them? No one judged them.
We know the backstory. The IA report we got through FEMA information.
He just highlighted information. No. Paul,
Detective
please.
Conklin's story. I'm your lawyer right now.
Paul did not. He did not judge. He just gave information.
But wait a second.
At no point
Harry,
did he judge.
We have extensive files from the police department about Detective Conklin. They investigated it. They wrote long reports, and they said he over and over again abused citizens' rights, lied about it, destroyed evidence, and they found him culpable, so that we're not making that up, and he got promoted.
See, but now you're talking about the unions, and
no.
A lot of people didn't get promoted. There was a woman named Rose Dell who those tough cop guys didn't like, and her biggest, she did not do anything near that. They claimed that once when she was at the scene, she sent video too quickly from a scene back to her place, and the chief said, "Uh-oh, I better not promote her because people will be mad at me," even though she scored at the top of the test.
Yeah, they were punishing her because of you, right? Because they thought she was connected with you.
I don't know. That's another question. The question is, will we have a Nixon and China moment in America? Because here's the thing. I feel very bad for Harry. We need to give Harry Droz, the Trump supporters, some mutual support here. Because you know how every time something happens now in the country that Fox News can't explain and the Trump base can't explain, he says, but Obama? Because he has everything. He's pretty soon going to have to say, but Trump. Because as of the last week, Donald Trump, he just had a New York-style Chinese dinner with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Mm-hmm. They had some ginger beef ordered into the White House, like the kind you eat in New York, like Chuck Schumer and Donald Trump love. And over dinner, with no Republicans around, they made an immigration compromise that Trump is going to support a bill to make all the Dreamers, the kids of undocumented immigrants, become citizens. And in return, he didn't ask for a border fence anymore. He just asked for more money for border security that everybody agrees with. And the Fox base is livid. Ann Coulter and Harry's other buddies are livid. And you're really no longer going to be. And he did that on top of making other agreements with the Democrats, like on the budget, on the debt ceiling.
Because the Democrats get stuff done.
What they always
but
did.
Do we see a permanent, is this, because what I saw with the Times today was very interesting. Some Republicans do want immigration reform, and they think that Trump will be able to accomplish what Obama and the two Bushes
Obama couldn't do it because he had two of his hands tied behind his
immigration, he might be able to get Congress to pass a law that actually addresses immigration in an intelligent way, in which Democrats and Republicans haven't been able to do.
But it's going to piss off his base.
I don't think he wants to be president a second term anyway. So,
but here's the deal.
I think that's the way he becomes president second term. Most of the country will love him for governing.
He would kill himself.
Parties.
I think Trump is.
He doesn't want to be
thing.
President.
No, he's like this. Sucks.
Like this is too confining.
I think
he had a better life before this.
Way better.
You know, I think he's looking at this thing and is like, listen, you know,
I did it.
I might get impeached.
Like, what's the fastest way out of
this? My kids are going to jail. I have to figure this out.
What's the best way for me to do this? Okay, these Republicans, they don't have my back. They're not stuffing.
He ain't got their back either. So.
Well, that's why right now the best thing for me to do is just like, Joe, why would I go out in history as the guy who put racism on the front
for Joe because he's on our show. He monopolizes the time.
That's totally incorrect, by the way.
Hold on. Can y'all stay on topic? Stay on topic.
Let me just make it clear for Joe and Paul, because I heard Joe this morning mischaracterizing what I said also. All right.
Harry's like, let the record show.
Immigration, legal, not illegal like Obama was for.
Here we go.
Okay. And
you like for
no
what?
But
what?
Obama.
What are you
Obama
about?
Passed an illegal.
Even Sam was like, oh.
Sam was like, I had to come all the way from Florida. For
something didn't even change.
Obama wrote an illegal.
Irmer sent him from Florida.
Executive order, DACA.
Yeah.
Which he said, and hope, you know. People could go on Facebook Live and look at my show. I gave all the clips of Obama saying he couldn't do that right before he did it. So all I want is legal immigration. And I do want to help DACA, the DACA people, but legally.
But Donald Trump
said he's sending all the DACA kids back, and he's building a wall, and he has changed his position on that.
You see.
Forget what Donald Trump said. I said what Harry is for.
No, Harry, here's what you're for. You're for the nonsense because at the end of the day.
He's for the nonsense.
Yeah, he's for the nonsense because at the end of the day, it wasn't illegal what President Obama did as far as DACA. There was nothing illegal about it.
I'm just saying
nice
by the
soundbite.
Words of that.
That
genius
is a nice soundbite.
Constitutional again, lawyer. Yeah.
No.
Obama. It's a soundbite.
But DACA wasn't ruled unconstitutional, was it? It was an executive order.
It was an executive order.
It's an executive order.
Ready, crusade all together for Harry, get used to it.
But Obama.
Sam,
he's never going to say but Trump. That's not going to happen.
On this, Sam?
I'm not getting in the middle of this.
Okay.
I've missed Harry's rants, but I have him on Facebook, so it's basically the same thing.
Makes it feel more like home.
Yeah, it's really nice to be back.
Two people died. Thank you. Two political figures in our city died this past week. Louisa DeLauro made it to 103 years old.
I know.
Serving older mother of Rosa DeLauro. Any thoughts on that?
I miss her. I first met her before I was even an alderman. I was at some political thing. And she needed a ride home. Mm-hmm. And she was like,
young lady,
can you give me a ride?
I know.
And I didn't know who she was. And I was like, why is this white woman asking me to give her? And she was a little old lady. And
she never had any hang-ups about it.
And she just got right in my car. She did not know me. And I drove her home. And she said, thank you.
And she knew which way to go, too. She was like, you're going over here? She had no...
You gave her a ride, too?
She did the same thing to me.
And I walked her to her door.
Yep.
And she had no fear.
No fear.
But she was the longest-standing mayor. I mean, Alder. Well, she was the mayor of Worcester Street.
Thank you.
So she was the longest-standing Alder woman in the city of New England.
Yeah, she was.
The other woman... person who died, that woman, Clifton Bush.
Yes.
Ooh, this is loud. Mayor
I can't hear you.
Clifton Bush ran for mayor.
No, don't turn it down. I just can't hear. The music is loud.
Your music is loud, so we can't hear you.
Okay.
We can't
Clifton
hear you.
Clifton Bush ran for mayor decades ago, but he was also a member of the Black United Front.
Yep.
And I heard from George Edwards, the activist in Texas.
Where is George Edwards? I haven't seen him in a long time.
I saw him yesterday.
Okay.
He was very upset because the Clifton Bush obituary. It said that he'd been a Black Panther, and George is the keeper of the Black Panther flames, and I never saw him Black Panthers, but. He said that apparently Clifton Bush was hanging out with Stokely Carmichael while Stokely was laying low in New Haven back in the day.
Oh.
But Clifton Bush was also a professor, an activist, black nationalist. Remember him at all? Or
no, I do.
So some of the
people he was well liked, well respected.
Yeah.
Well, folks, next week you won't hear me because it's Rosh Hashanah.
Happy Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you, Jewish New Year. Thank you for joining us today in Dateline, New Haven. We'll hope that Harry gets a few weeks to practice but Trump. thank you for joining us with the best pundits in the business, Bab Joel's Ivy, Markeisha Ricks, Norma Rodriguez-Reyes, Harry Gross, Mr. Joe Ugly.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.
See you all next week.